Off the ball
on News Talk.
In association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.
Welcome back. I should tell you, by the way, we are going to Cork Opera House next Wednesday. It's the latest Off the Ball Roadshow with Heineken Rugby Club. We have some very special guests. Paul O'Connell is going to be there, Mick Galway, Keith Wood. And if you want to come along for the last 31 minutes now, the tickets have been available. The link is open, otb.com/Cork. So go to otb.com/Cork and try and get yourself some tickets. We expect them to go very quickly. And there's a pair of VIP tickets up for grabs as well if you go to facebook.com/offtheball, where you win the best seats in the house and a meet and greet with the guests. So that's the latest Off the Ball Roadshow, Cork Opera House, next Wednesday, 11th of October, with thanks to Heineken Rugby Club. John Giles is on the line. Evening, John.
Evening, Joe.
So we know who our manager is for the next 2 years, Martin O'Neill. This kind of came out of nowhere, because funny enough, he did a press conference earlier on today and he half referenced a chat maybe with John Delaney a few weeks or months ago about maybe staying on, and things seemed reasonably positive, and that was all he had to say in the press conference. And then FAI TV on social media broke with Martin O'Neill sitting there very happy talking about having agreed a contract now, and he's signed up for the next 2 years, and we understand Roy Keane will be with him and all the backroom team essentially with him. So the timing of this, talk to us.
Well, it's probably unusual, Joe, because the next couple of matches are going to be very, very important as to whether we qualify or we don't qualify. And I think most associations wait until either have or you haven't qualified. But obviously, the FEI have a lot of respect for him and see him as the man for the future. And that's it.
It seems premature.
Well, I think it's always a bit premature when again, Joe, I'm just repeating myself now, you either qualify or you don't qualify, and we've got two matches to go before it's either very, very good or very, very poor.
Mm.
And I think most people wait until you see exactly what's happened. So it is unusual.
I appreciate you can't speak for the FAI. What do you think their logic is here?
Well, I think obviously they consider that Martin O'Neill has done well. We qualified for the Euros last time. We might still qualify for the World Cup. And I'd say that's considered a good job. So I think most associations don't like to make changes anyway, Joe. You know, I think they obviously have confidence in Martin and Roy Keane to go on and qualify for the next tournament. Or else they wouldn't extend the contract.
See, might is the key word. We might qualify for the World Cup. We might also tank quite bad. We could lose tomorrow. We could perform abysmally in Wales. It could all go to pieces, and then you're stuck with the manager, who I don't think if you held off until next week. I mean, you could even wait until the playoffs. I don't think if you waited until next Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday to see how it all unfolds over the next few days, I don't think Martin O'Neill's stock is so high that he'll be nabbed from us suddenly. So I must say, personally, I don't understand the timing. I don't see what the FAI have to gain here by not waiting.
No, I don't think it's usual, Joe. I think the business part of it would be to wait and see what's going to happen in the next 2 days. Nobody knows what's going to happen in the next 2 days, unless the Football Association obviously feel that Martin and Roy Keane are going in the right direction.
Mm. So you're not seeing the logic either here, I'm guessing.
The logic in
giving him the contract today.
Well, if I were in charge, I'd probably wait, Joe.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. 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 Because you don't know what's going on. It's only a couple of days. You don't know what's going to happen. But I'm only trying to speak on how the FAI are thinking, which means that they've got confidence in the two people that we're talking about, and that they're going to lead us in the future, and they're the people for the job.
Mm.
Obviously, that's the thinking, or else you wouldn't extend the contract.
Because I guess the other example that we can think of in the recent history is Trapattoni on the eve of 2012 was given a new contract, and then effectively we felt a bit stuck with him. Things felt a bit toxic and like we could have done with a change after Euro 2012, but the contract was already signed. You risk that feeling, you risk that atmosphere again happening.
Totally. I mean, if you do anything that you don't have to do, there's always a possibility that it's going to go wrong.
Yeah,
there's always that possibility. There's no doubt about that. And it's that's the situation now. I mean, if we lose, I mean, the way the game goes is amazing the way it goes, John. If we qualify, Martin and Roy Keane will be absolute heroes.
Mm.
That's the way the game works. And I think what the thinking would be that, you know, we should go to the last match, Joe, in the qualifying group. That is acceptable.
And do you think it's acceptable when you look at the group?
No, I think if we played as well as we could possibly play, Joe, we could have topped the group.
Mm. And we were top at one point, quite a way into
through. Yeah, halfway through it.
Yeah. So back November 13th, yeah. if they come out in the morning of November 13th after we'd beaten Austria and said, well, look, we Martin O'Neill's stock sky high, we're locking this guy down. I think everybody would said, okay, I see the logic, he's doing a great job. But since then, draw with Wales, draw with Austria, the draw in Georgia, the loss to Serbia, that stock isn't so high anymore. So it doesn't make as much sense. And as you said...
Well, I don't think it would have made sense then, Joe.
Fair enough. So, but arguably it makes even less sense now.
Well, yeah, of course. What are you trying to get me to say, Joe? I know what you're saying. Mm. It is premature. I wouldn't go any further than that. And I wouldn't do it. I would wait until the matches were over and then take stock. You've got plenty of time then between now and the start of the next competition, whether you decide whether the manager deserves the extension or not. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. I don't know what I'm trying to get you to say, I suppose.
I think you're trying to get me to say that if it were me, I'd kick out Martin O'Neill and Roy Keane if they didn't qualify.
And would you?
No, not necessarily. I'd wait until the matches came out, Joe. I mean, you know, in football, they could be beaten by Moldova, play exceptionally well, have a bad night, very unlucky night, same going to Wales. You don't know.
Of course.
What I'm saying is that it's happened before. I remember years ago when Jack Charlton had his first... when he first started the job, I don't know, it was the Euros. I think it was the Euros. And Jack Charlton was getting unbelievable stick, Joe, in the press for being useless. And Scotland go to Bulgaria, who Bulgaria hadn't been beaten for years. It was such a bent place anyway. Hadn't been beaten for years for Scotland to win. And we qualified. Jack was off fishing, getting a lot of stick in the press. And the result came through. Scotland won. And Jack was immediately a hero.
Mm-hmm.
Hadn't done anything. Had gone fishing. Gave up on it. People weren't happy with him at all. And without kicking a ball, without us kicking a ball, Scotland go and win. And we qualify.
Yeah.
And the papers, the media next day, Jack was the hero.
Yeah. No, look, here's the thing, right? We'll move off this and talk about what you think is going to happen over the next few days. I suppose I was hoping to see, was there a logic I wasn't quite seeing here? Because I understand that, you know, one game against Wales could change everything, absolutely. And that's somewhat unfair on a manager, but that's the reality of a manager's gig.
Yeah.
And so if the one game goes very badly, you know, footballers can be fickle. It can contaminate the atmosphere and it can just bring momentum to a halt. And, you know, you just feel like you need a change. And so... in a completely unnecessary way, it seems the FAI have locked themselves into Martin O'Neill. So if things do go very badly against Wales, and there is a kind of atmosphere where, ugh, you know, we could have done with a change here and the players aren't quite buying into the manager, it strikes me that the FAI have unnecessarily potentially locked themselves to something that they shouldn't. And I can't see the logic, frankly. I don't understand why.
I don't think there's any logic in it, Joe. There's not much logic when it comes to football. All I'm saying is I'm trying to think of how the FAI are thinking that the two of them have done a good job up to now, and if we do win over the next couple of days, then it's great to have them on, or they have confidence in them to do better, and the team has improved to do what's needed for the future.
Mm.
I mean, I'll give you what I think.
I would definitely wait. Yeah, I hear you.
I would definitely wait and see, and then have time then to dwell over it, look at the whole situation, and say, are Roy and Martin the people we need going on in the future?
Mm. Yeah, I think that's.
I wouldn't do it now.
Yeah, I think that's the reaction of most people.
Yeah.
So. allow me to do something I shouldn't do and take Moldova for granted and talk to you about the Wales game. No Gareth Bale. So does that turn this into a 50-50 game again?
I wouldn't put the odds that high just because Bale is not playing. I mean, Bale played in Dublin, as we know, not so long ago, Joe, and he didn't play very well at all. Mm. Now, obviously, we've a better chance with Bale not playing, but I wouldn't take the odds from them being favourites to go to 50-50. You know?
Yeah.
I don't think that it will make. I don't think Bale would make that much difference. Although he is a loss to them. So I mean, it is to our benefit that he's not playing. Mm. There's no doubt about that. Mm.
To what extent do you think it suits us to have to win these games in terms of attitude? Some of our best performances seem to be when we go in and we've no choice but to go for it.
I think it's key, Joe.
Right.
If you look back even in Trapattoni's time, the best we ever played is when we played France in the playoff.
Yeah.
And we played like we never played before or since under Trapattoni. If you look at recent times now, we had to beat Germany last year and beat them.
Mm.
We had to beat Italy in the Euros and beat them.
Mm.
So that's a definite plus. I think what we have to do in the next two matches actually is not as difficult as we have to do in the run into for the Euros.
Yeah.
So I think there's everything is psychological in all sports, Joe. And I felt it does happen with players. If you look back on the matches we played, when we've something to lose, we sit back,
yeah,
and we invite the people on. If you go back to Serbia, the first match in the campaign, I mean, this place was supposed to be a fortress. There was this, that, and the other. Actually, the goalkeeper was the worst goalkeeper I've ever seen in international football, and they were very, very bad at the back. We went one up after 2 minutes, and we went 2-1 down, and we almost went 3-1 down. Then we started playing again. So the things we've done in the past, there's no doubt that when we've had to do it, I think it releases the players mentally that a draw is no good here.
Mm.
We have to do it. I think you play in a different. I think we've played in a different way, and I think that's the situation now.
Yeah, it's a very interesting thing. I mean, psychology is endlessly interesting anyway, because I'm sure you saw the Burnley goal where Brady long ball and Ward combines and puts a ball in for Hendrick, and it's this goal with very noticeably three Irish players involved against Everton at the weekend. And you know, Martin O'Neill was asked during the week, well, God, we don't really see this kind of ambition or even just this kind of relaxed attacking football when they're in green jerseys, and O'Neill kind of didn't give much of an answer. Kevin Kilbane on the show this week, interested for your thoughts on this. Kev said, look, it's not like it should necessarily be this way, but in his experience, he found the big difference between playing for Burnley and Ireland, you know, you're there with Burnley and you've got the local media with you, but you can go out and it's not the end of the world if things don't come off. But he said, you come into Ireland camp, it's a full week of national media attention. There's such huge pressure around the games that you are that bit tighter when you play for Ireland. It is that bit more difficult for the likes of Brady, Ward and Hendrick to do what they did against Everton on the international stage.
I wouldn't agree with that, Joe.
That was his experience, though.
Yeah. I'm not doubting Kevin. I mean, that was you. I think overall there shouldn't be such a big difference when you're playing for Burnley or when you're playing for Ireland.
Mm.
I think what happens with a lot of players, and the psychology comes into it, when you've got something to lose, in other words, when you go in front early on, Joe, now you've got something to lose, and there is a temptation, there's no doubt, for players to sit back and hold on to what they have.
Yeah.
That happens. Now, I mean, a great example of that not happening is actually with Guardiola, with the way his teams play. Now, I don't agree with everything he does, like last season, for the goalkeeper playing out from the back too much, or the fullbacks coming into midfield. But there's no doubt that, you see, when you see Guardiola's team play, I'm using him as an example, there's no home and away with him.
Yeah.
He plays the way he wants them to play, and not only does he encourage them, he insists that they do that.
Mm.
And that's what managers have to do. They have to insist. In other words, I want you to do that. If you lose doing what I want you to do, it's my fault.
Mm.
So that's, they call it freedom, you know, freedom to play.
Yeah.
That's become a bit of a cliche now. But that's what happens with these. That's what happens when managers do that. It's the manager sets the tone
mm.
that I want you to do it.
Mm.
You know? And if you, if we lose doing what I want you to, in other words, if we go early, see, what happened to the C-Clack cliches with the Irish team in the last match? I think it was Duffy after the match, who played very, very well, said maybe we scored too early. Mm. Now, this is nonsense, Joe. In other words, if you were the manager, you should be saying, whatever you do when you go out there, don't score too early. Like, scoring early is bad. Mm. This is nonsense. If you score early, then you gain confidence from it. Mm. That's what you should do.
Yeah, it really does seem to result in us sitting back for whatever reason.
But that's the history. That's what we've done. I mean, we've scored in Serbia after 2 minutes. We scored somewhere after 2 minutes, and then you give it away then. Mm. You know, and there's no doubt against Serbia. We played, the goalkeeper's the worst I've ever seen, Joe, and they were very, very bad at the back. They had a few players missing. So when we went 2-1 down, nearly 3-1 down, now you're free to go again. There's nothing to lose by attacking.
Yeah,
it's like going to France in Trapattoni. Draw was no good. Mm. So if you went 1-0, it's no good giving, sitting back. You'd have to go for it.
Yeah.
And that's it. It's psychology in football, and a lot of teams do it. You know, get a goal in front, and then they start getting very, very defensive.
Yeah.
Very defensive. And we've done it quite a bit.
So hopefully we go all guns blazing on Monday. A last question on that particular game. How confident are you? I appreciate we don't know what the teams are yet.
I think we should beat Moldova.
Sure.
I think we're capable of winning the two matches, Joe. Now, it's a big task, and it's a difficult one. But I think Moldova are not good. Hmm. And you see, this is Wales are no great shakes. Actually, there's no great shakes in the group, Joe.
Yeah.
There's no great shakes in the group. And I think we do, at times, give them too much credit for what they are rather than what we are. We're all supposed to be. Why would we have to be the underdogs all the time? Mm. There's no great team out there. We saw that in the Euros. I mean, you got Iceland, you got Northern Ireland. There's no great teams out there. And I think sometimes we overrate the teams that we're playing against. Now, in the last two matches, we can't afford to overrate anybody, Joe. We have to go in, so there'll be a freedom about, in a certain way, to do what's needed to be done. Mm. I think this is easier than the last time. I think I repeated myself there.
Yeah.
When we had to beat Germany, for example,
that was
a bigger task. But we did it. And I think we can do it when we have to do it, and there's a different mindset going into the matches.
Okay, well, here's hoping. John, sit tight a moment. There's some texts in, and I want to talk to you about painkillers in football as well. Back in a second. You're welcome back. John Giles is with us, and I'm sure you might have seen during the week, Dejan Lovren of Liverpool is talking about the fact that he now has to take pills so I can play a game. I'm taking 5 pills before every game, he said.
Mm.
And Daniel Agger wrote a very good piece, formerly of Liverpool, about a year ago, and he was saying he'd taken far too many anti-inflammatories and painkillers across his career. He damaged himself further. And Agger, in his last game, which was for Bromby, John, he fell asleep on the team bus to the game. He'd taken so much stuff. And then he had to take caffeine tablets to try and snap himself out of it. And then he was substituted after half an hour because, naturally, he didn't play very well. And he doesn't remember it. So I think
that's happened to a few Liverpool defenders.
Yeah. We've seen the great footage of Don Revy kind of giving you guys massages. But what about when you needed more? What was the culture in your day, John?
I don't know what the culture is today, Joe. I mean, there was never anybody falling asleep on the bus, and I can't understand being that type of medication being helpful to somebody playing football.
Mm.
But in my day, I think there was more pressure actually on the players to play injured than there is today, Joe. Because first of all, the squads were smaller. You know, in my time, say at Leeds, we had a squad of 16, and Don Revie would play the same team every week if he could. In fact, Bill Shankly used to boast that the best way to win the league, was to change the team as little as you possibly could.
Mm.
In other words, playing the same players every week. So there weren't that big a squad of players. So I think there was more pressure actually on the players to play in those days than there is today.
Yeah. And so I mean, look, invariably, I mean, you're going to get a lot of knocks across the season. It's a tough game. Like, is it cortisone? Is it painkillers? Is it anti-inflammatories?
Well, again, in my day, this is 40 years ago, Joe, the medical situation wouldn't be as good as it is today. And I'd say it would have been much cruder in those days. I remember having a situation with Don at Leeds. We played Manchester United in a match, and I was having trouble with my hamstring.
Mm.
And Don said, I want you to play tomorrow. And I said, I don't think I'll be able to. Well, I said, I'll be able to play, but I won't be able to play as well as I can play. And he was getting very, very aggressive about it. Right. You know, I want you there to play. And I knew it wasn't right to play. And I said, look, if I play tomorrow, I think this hamstring will go again, and I'm going to be out for another 3 weeks or 4 weeks. Now, see, with managers, the next match is the most important one, Joe. There's a lot of pressure, even on Don Revie. He was a very successful manager. There was a lot of pressure on him, and he really wants me to play. And I knew it wasn't right to play. And I said, I'm not playing. I said, look, don't you think I want to play? I said, but I don't think it's right. I'm not going to play. Oh, he was really, really annoyed. Really annoyed with me. Now, I was an experienced player at that time. But actually, they went to Old Trafford and got a draw. On Monday, he was as bright as could be, you know, because the match was over. And of course, for the next Saturday, I was right as rain. But that particular Friday, the pressure was on him. The pressure was on all the managers. I want you to play. I want you to do it. And there were needles going around in those days, Joe, that nobody knew what they were. But we had a very, very bad experience. I think it was in 1974. We were going for the league title. And Mick Jones, who was a big centre-forward for us, a very lovely lad. And he played, and he was getting injections for the last 8 matches, I think.
Right.
And he never played again. It actually finished him.
Wow.
So that's how serious it could be. There was a lad at Stoke, with Captain Dennis Smith, his name, a big centre-half, game lad, like brave as could be. And Terry Conroy played with him, and he finished prematurely because the manager could talk him into playing. And managers would do that in those days. There was a lot of, see, talk about pressure on managers. A lot of pressure on managers in those days. And again, with a small squad, you know, like Dennis Smith was a key player for Stoke, a big centre half, good player, and he was a key player. He wouldn't have had a replacement for him. And that's the way. And there was a lot of pressure. And in those days, obviously, they weren't as good in the medical situation as they are today. So there was a lot of experimental stuff, Joe, that I think in my day finished quite a few players.
Well, we've seen your generation and the, you know, the hip operations and the knee operations that they've needed in later life. And so what do you think were in the injections? Was it cortisone? Could it have been anything?
I don't know what was in them, Joe. I don't think anybody knew what was in them. Certainly the medical people might have known what was in them, but the players didn't know what was
and
in them.
And it wouldn't have been the culture for a player to go, what's in this?
No.
Yeah. Stick it in me, I'll go play.
Players wouldn't be in. Players want to play, well, in my time, and I think it's the same, the players want to play, Joe.
Yeah.
And if the doctor's saying, or the medical situation, say, look, we'll give you this jab or whatever it might be, will it help me play? Oh, yeah. You know, you don't know what you're getting. See, a lot of them be painkillers, Joe. Now, I don't know what would be in the painkillers, but it would kill the pain. But you were doing more damage. I think that's what happened to Mick Jones.
Yeah.
Like, it would stop the pain. But obviously, when it was doing... Just because the pain has stopped doesn't mean you're not doing damage.
Well, the pain is a warning sign.
Exactly. So that you could get rid of that. And then, like, Monday morning, you'd be struggling again and it comes to the match. But the managers were under severe pressure. And like, Don Revie wouldn't be the only one. You know, it was common in football in those days.
I'm sure, yeah.
I don't know how much it is today. I think less so, because if you look at the Manchester United squad, for example, Joe, I mean, Mourinho could field 2 teams, and he's not the only one. You know, most of them have 20, 22 players now. So if there's a player, there's less pressure, I think, on the actual players to play today, plus the medical situation is much clearer in what they're doing. Like in my day, they didn't know what they were doing, Joe. So there were quite a few players retired or prematurely.
And were you generally lucky, or was there a long period where you were taking injections and painkillers to get through chunks of the season?
No, I never did it. No. I got injuries that put me out for a while that were a little bit complicated. I mean, I had one injury to the hamstrings at the back of my leg. It took me about 3 months to have it diagnosed. But I wasn't, I couldn't play anyway. But I never took an injection to play.
Right.
Because I didn't, because even with an injection, Joe, this doesn't mean, it's a psychological thing. I knew I couldn't play. Like, even when I told you about that match at Old Trafford, Don said, look, I just want you to stand in the middle and do this. Well, I said, I can't play like that. If I have to play like that, I'm not going to be any good to you anyway. And it's in your mind, Joe, with an injury. You're not free, you know, you're not free to do the things that you want to do.
Yeah.
So it's actually, it's a silly way of, or was a silly way of going about it. because in Stadio of my place, I didn't play that, missed that match, but I was all right for the following week. If I had played against Manchester United, I could well have been out for another 4 weeks.
Yeah.
But on the Friday, Dom was insistent. That Friday was the next match, was the most important one, had to be that match. Monday morning, he was right as rain with me, and I was okay.
Mm. Yeah, very interesting. Listen, John, we'll leave it there, and hopefully next Thursday we're talking about Ireland through to playoffs.
I hope so, Joe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, goodbye. Joe. Bye.
Off the Ball on Newstalk.
In association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.